Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Raimundo Sierra. He is the CEO and founder of Vertimed. Raimundo, thanks for joining me today.
Well, great pleasure to be here.
So as I do with all of my guests, tell us a little bit about your background and how you arrived at this company, this activity, and also share where you are as well.
All right. Well, happy to do so. I do start then at the very beginning. So I grew up in Chile in South America, came to Switzerland when I was 11. And so certainly a bit of a mix of cultures there. I went into studying electrical engineering out of curiosity because I had really no idea what a computer is. We didn't have one at home. And so when I came to ETH, there was this develop your website. I was like, what is a website? And where do I turn this thing on? What do I do with this? So there definitely a steep learning curve. And from there, actually, at some point, there was this lecture called medical image analysis that piqued my interest. And I went and did this lecture and got really excited about this intersection of technology and healthcare and software and healthcare. Ended up doing a master thesis in the field in Boston. Came back and started a PhD with the topic of surgical training simulation. So that's what brought me into this field. In the time in between, I went back to the US, did a postdoc there. I went into consulting. I worked for one of the largest consulting companies, learned a bit of management there, let's say. Went into agriculture. I was building up corporate digitization at Syngenta at some point, and then really got back to the roots. To Vertimed, as we were looking into how do we scale this company that I had co-founded from the time, maybe 25 people, to where we are today. And so that was back to the roots and got me hooked since, because indeed what we're doing is fantastic, is energizing, and we share a lot of passion here in the team to advance actually healthcare with surgical training and simulation.
Fantastic. So, wide and varied career, I think that's always, you know, hugely valuable in terms of contributing to setting up a company. One of the things that, you know, I think we learn over time is that to be successful, you've got to have a wide set of experiences. You've clearly had that. Tell us a little bit about Vertimed and what is it that they do?
So what we do at Vertimed is develop and market surgical training simulators. So think of flight simulators for pilot, exactly the same for surgeons. We started out of a project of about 20 PhDs from the Swiss National Science Foundation working on this topic until 2007. That's when we set up the company. And today we have products in orthopedics, in gynecology, in urology, in laparoscopy, and in robotic surgery. And really, it's all about how do we use simulation and the technology to train and educate future surgeons to build their skills, their psychomotor skills, to really perform excellent surgeries.
Fantastic. I can only imagine the brain power of 20 PhDs in one room that were focused on this problem. Must have been an exciting time, obviously. A lot of work to get to that point of actually launching a company. Tell us a little bit about the sort of early days of that process, because as I try and think back, I want to say, I hope I don't get this wrong, but that was that even pre the iPhone? Yeah.
Yes.
So, think about that as a revolution of our sort of interaction with the world. Tell us a little bit about what was going on then and some of the things that you had and the journey as you've seen it.
Absolutely. Very happy. Basically, in the 90s, there was a project to build a simulator. The idea is very old. How can we train physicians? How can we use technology for it? I think it goes back to the 80s or 90s. Indeed, there was a project in the 90s to build a laparoscopy simulator. Unfortunately, at the end of it, surgeons would say, yeah, that's like playing Pac-Man. And so indeed, the effort to put so many PhDs behind it was the goal. Can we build the first simulator where surgeons would say, yep, that's like the real thing. I recognize what I do as an experienced surgeon. I believe this can really train people. And so indeed, this effort with 20 PhDs over time, it wasn't everybody at the same time, but indeed in an intensive collaborative work next to the hospital, from my office to the operating room, it was 5 minutes. And so really being very close to the physicians. But then you mentioned the revolution with the iPhone. And indeed, we at that time, we bought a 1 million supercomputer because one of the limitations was the computational power. And I asked my professor, do you mind if I buy a gaming PC with a graphic card, the latest one for 3,000-4,000? And indeed, I managed to outperform this 1 million computer with a gaming computer in the early 2000s. And so this is where we really gained confidence as well. You know what? Computational power is getting to the level that we can achieve such realism. And so indeed, it was fun, right? Because you were like programming and you have this company showing you how to program a $1 million computer, and then you hack it on a graphics card of a gaming PC and you outperform it. And it was quite revealing. We also did a lot of focus, right? So somebody was doing blood flow simulation, somebody was analyzing tissue deformation, doing even experiments on humans to figure out what is the tissue behavior, variable model generation, cutting and tissue dissection, etc. All things that still today you will not find in games in the consumer world has. And so that was definitely a revolution back then. And I think it was really a testimony to this project in 2007, where the surgeons would say, yep, this is indeed like doing a hysteroscopy. This is how it works in reality. I see it in the simulation. And I would argue that that's stayed with the company. This is our DNA. And how do we create simulators that are truly relevant, that really reflect what is needed to perform in the operating room? And that level of quality and relevance is something that we always pursue with the work that we do. And so that's also when we went from gynecology, later on to urology, then to arthroscopy, and only very recently into laparoscopy, it was because we really felt like we need to have more technology, more advancements to get into these procedures that are highly complex, because you're really having the whole abdominal area to simulate and the interactions there, etc. So it took us a while to get there, but I do believe that indeed what we've brought to market now is indeed yet again a substantial game changer.
So, you know, there's some interesting elements in there that are worth unpacking. First of all, I think, you know, this is a recurring theme in other areas that I've heard repeatedly, which is, you know, something I term the adjacent possible. And you talk about being 5 minutes away from the operating room. How much of a contribution was that? Was there a lot of flow between the two areas, yours, which was obviously research-based, and the surgeons that you were working with?
Oh, absolutely. This was key and crucial. So Michael, also co-founder, gynecologist, and I, we very quickly became friends. And to date, we're very close with each other. Being able to say, hey, Michael, explain that to me. How does it really work? And getting the answer and this translation was so crucial. And then if it was too difficult or just really, hey, I'm in the operating room this afternoon, do you want to come over and see what I'm doing? Right? To really understand and appreciate what it is that they're doing and how they're doing it, what are the challenges, what they care about. And I often compare this to, we want to build the best race car. And I'm sure every race car driver can tell you if this car is better than the other, but they're not the guys designing and engineering the car. And so this is maybe this working together that we need to understand what they actually need without being able to ask them, hey, please design it for me. And so this is indeed, to date, as a company, we don't have surgeons or medical professionals hired in the company. We always work with them, but it's really to work very closely together, whether they're an individual, whether they're part of a medical society, also appreciating the differences actually on a global level. Surgeons here in Europe may do things different than in the US, in the US West versus East Coast versus in Asia. And so really understanding the other side and working with them is essential.
Absolutely. The other thing that you mentioned, and I want to go back to it, partly because it brings back a little bit of, you know, positive memory from my childhood. I was pretty good at Pac-Man, I just want to say. and I'm curious to know why, what was it that was describing that was ineffective about the experience? So I recognize that was a game, but we've seen a certain amount of gamification in some of the tools and experiences. So I don't think it's just that it was a game. What was it about that reference that made it ineffective at that time?
I think it's about change management to a certain degree. Right. So what we're doing by providing technology for education and healthcare is to a certain degree change how people are educated, how they learn and get the skills. And so you also need to overcome this disbelief that something more basic can teach you a skill if you don't see how it actually translates to the ultimate skills that you need. And so indeed, the answer is not to just do really the high fidelity and as close as possible to the patient or to the cadaver, but we need to have these steps that get you there. And so nowadays we do have what we call basic skills learning, which is more the Pac-Man style, which is maybe you need to move boxes, you need to hold a thread, you need to learn to navigate with the camera, the endoscopic view, etc. So you need to learn those skills, but then you need to build up on those and put them into the context of a body and connect the complexity of the anatomy in which you are with the limited space that you have to navigate, the bones that may be in the way, the space, the tensions that you need to create, the forces that are necessary, the use of these instruments. Put this all together, and then you also need to learn the procedure. These are complex procedures, right? I mean, I take an example, rotator cuff repair. I mean, I couldn't do it even on the simulator myself because there are so many steps, and then you have different anchors, you put different sutures that you need to pull, and you need to do all of this right to do the proper rotator cuff. And so it is a very complex procedure involving many dozens of steps. And so once you have that, you can start to feel confident, okay, I can actually do this on a patient. And obviously the gold standard in the past was see one, do one, teach one, this type of apprenticeship model, which I think trivializes a little bit because reality was more sophisticated than it still is. Nevertheless, it is about really getting very quickly into a cadaver lab, getting into a surgery and assisting a surgery. But the complexity of the medicine, of the procedure, et cetera, can really be taught and learned on simulators nowadays, as I was describing, essentially on steps and phases. And 20 years ago, I guess, indeed, just seeing the first step clearly wasn't enough to convince a profession this is the way to go. And I understand it because, indeed, the gap from the basic skills all the way to a procedure is huge.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Today, I'm talking to Raimundo Sierra. He is the CEO and founder of Vertimed. We were just talking about the innovation beyond see one, do one, teach one. I know all of my clinical colleagues will resonate with that mantra that was part of our sort of training and the innovation, you know, exciting times. And I think, you know, the inflection point that I heard in what you described was, you know, the $1 million computer that was, I don't want to say replaced, but certainly superseded by a gaming computer and, you know, the offload into the GPU that was really one of the great innovations at the time. That obviously added a huge amount of potential. But the other thing you talked about was these different teams focused on different areas, blood flow, tissue, you know, the way that things feel. You talk about the force field. I can only imagine the level of excitement you must have at this point with all of the tools that are able. Tell us a little bit about where you see this whole digital surgery and this innovation going. I mean, I think the world must be sort of opening up almost.
Absolutely. And indeed, fantastic times with so many opportunities, but also fundamental challenges that we need to get our heads around and get into. And so obviously, as a company coming from the simulation world, what are we doing with the simulators? I say we're doing a digital twin patient. We're creating a replica of the human patient as a simulator. And so indeed, you talked about innovation and inflection points. Another one is definitely the cloud and the ability to collect data on the cloud. And I would add another one, which is the advancements in the gaming industry when it comes to gaming platforms. And so those are all technologies that we indeed have mastered by now also as a company that I believe are setting us up for a future in this digital surgery space using simulation. And not only the simulation of the patient, but also the simulation of the surgeon. So we've been doing now about 3 years of research in this field, machine learning, to see where can we bring algorithms to actually do parts of the task. Of course, not the whole procedure, but just parts of it. And how can an algorithm learn to, for example, maneuver a camera given a certain task, given a certain goal function? And so indeed, this is where I do see us going in terms of understanding medicine and surgeries, mapping that into our in silico digital world and leveraging that digital world for training, but then also obviously for surgeries and innovation.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up, you know, that learning capability and applying some of the augmentation, because, you know, replacing some of that skill set, very challenging, but, you know, huge opportunity. What comes to mind as you talk about moving the camera, I think about sports and the capabilities of their, you know, flyby cameras that are following essentially live action. Things change all the time, but I imagine that they're doing some similar kind of, you know, modeling that says, how do we give the best view to our audience? You're doing the same thing for surgeons and trying to automate some of that, which, you know, they do as part of the whole process. So there's some tremendous sort of opportunities here, again, with that adjacent possible, I think.
Very true, very true. And these are exactly the exciting things that we're exploring. I think that indeed, and we explored this really in depth and thought about this and have partnerships and collaborations and discussions with global thought leaders on the matter, but really to see what is possible and where are we pushing the boundaries and where are we even naive thinking what will be possible one day. And I think that that's an exciting field. We don't have all the answers, but we do have early results from these that are very, very exciting. And so indeed, you mentioned that this drone following a person and taking the shots, etc. As we go into surgery and into human bodies, the complexity of the human body, the individual differences, etc., are challenges we don't face. Also self-driving cars, right? Streets are human-made, but here we're dealing with nature, the body, the human, etc. So I think that that's clearly on a technical level a certain challenge, but then also validation and relevance. I mentioned that before, but really validating what we're doing. And that's not just about validation that I sort of made sure the code has no bugs or that I follow an ISO process, etc. But fundamentally, how do you validate an algorithm that may be trying to solve things, tasks that we don't even understand how they're functioning? And so indeed, we're here entering a field where this digital world and analogy is fascinating. We were just at the beginning, but will really help us see how you can use supervised learning, right, that mimics human behaviors and human experts with the data that we've collected. But then beyond that, maybe things that, we can do even better with it. And indeed, we're just starting. We're using these analogies to explain what we're trying to do. Like a self-driving car started by telling you, well, you're getting off the line and you should move a little bit to the left, and you have now the blinking, etc. And it's an analogous journey, but I think we're really dealing with nature, with the human body, and the expectation also that in healthcare, we don't want to take risks. So we need to manage all of that.
So you bring up an interesting point with that sort of capability, obviously the complexity, all the variations in anatomy. You mentioned something that really sort of piqued my interest, and I feel like that's somewhere in the future, which I'd like you to sort of close with. You mentioned the digital twin patient. And my sense of this is that you might get to a point where you fully simulate a surgery, especially a complex surgery, prior to actually doing it. And that would be the sort of standard of care.
All right. Well, I love your vision. I love the idea that you're bringing here forward, because indeed that is a unique opportunity. I want to go one step further than that, mm-hmm. which is, if I can replicate the specific patient, let's say me or Raimundo need to go to surgery tomorrow, I have a scan of my body and it's all put into a simulator. In reality, and I don't think this is going to change in the future, doing the whole surgery beforehand on the simulator is going to be, it's not going to be economical. And the surgeon needs to be in the operating room doing the surgery, and he will have skills to actually do this, and he will have robots and all the things that help him. However, to figure out automatically what is the critical step of that procedure to pay attention to understand, look, all the things like removing the fat, etc., all that is routine. But here in minute, whatever, 25, you will face this challenging situation, and we've run it for you, and we've simulated it, and we tested it, and here are 2-3 options that you should look at, and maybe you want to try it out yourself. And so indeed, condensing and compressing this preoperative planning to what is critical, tailored to the patient, tailored to the surgeon, that's the vision that I think, building on what you said, this is where we're going.
That's so exciting. I mean, that's definitely the kind of surgery I want, for sure. So in the closing moments, tell us, what are you most excited about for your future and the future of Vertimed?
First of all, the technology possibilities in healthcare, education in healthcare, and then also partnerships. Working with, this is not something we will do alone and solve alone. It requires the partnership with innovation institutions, universities, and partnerships with the medical side. And so really bringing this together on the table and pushing the frontier in healthcare, that's what excites me, and I think it excites all of us here at Vertimed.
Fantastic. Well, as usual, we've run out of time. Just remains for me to thank you, Raimundo, for joining me today. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you also from my side, Dr. Nick. It's a pleasure to be here, and I hope this is indeed giving a glimpse into the future.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, The Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.